I'm Carrie Miller. This is NPR News, now in depth on decriminalizing marijuana in the Trump era. White House spokesman Sean Spicer dropped a bombshell on the legal marijuana business recently when he said that the country should be prepared for, quote, greater enforcement of federal marijuana laws. His warning comes as four states and the District of Columbia just legalized the use of recreational marijuana, and 28 states now have laws that permit medical marijuana, including Minnesota. What happens when the federal and state laws on pot clash? And are we quickly moving to a day when a majority of Americans can use marijuana legally? Two guests, your view on this, and this is what I want to know from you. Has your opinion on permitting the use of recreational marijuana changed over the last several years? And tell me why. And do you think we should simply treat marijuana like we treat alcohol, regulating it but permitting it? So I want to know if you've undergone an opinion change when it comes to legalizing recreational marijuana. And then I want to know about how you think about regulating legal use of marijuana, whether we should treat it basically like we treat alcohol. Here's the phone number, 800-242-2828, 651-227-6000. I'm on Twitter, at Carrie, K-E-R-R-I-M-P-R. Manny Munson-Regala is a former regulatory and compliance officer with the Minnesota Department of Commerce and the Minnesota Management and Budget Office, and he's now the principal of Root Cause Consulting and with me in the studio. Welcome. Good to have you here.
Thanks, Carrie.
Kevin Sabet is with us. He's director of the Drug Policy Institute at the University of Florida and co-founder of Smart Approaches to Marijuana. And he's with us today from, where are you? Where are you at, Kevin?
I'm in Alexandria, Virginia.
Okay, really good to have you on the show. Thank you. Manny, you probably noted during the campaign that candidate Trump said he thought legalizing marijuana ought to be a, quote, state issue. I wonder if the arrival of Jeff Sessions as attorney general has changed some of this.
Oh, from tracking what the industry has been saying, from the nomination of Attorney General Sessions, they were pretty nervous. Senator Sessions was clearly not a fan of cannabis, recreational or medical, and his initial steps don't seem to particularly give much comfort to states.
What alarms you that you've seen so far, besides these comments that Spicer made?
So Sessions just put out a memorandum that while talking about enhanced enforcement of violent crimes, specifically calls out drug trafficking as an example of an area where violent crimes may occur. Mm-hmm. Now, that could lead one to conclude that maybe Sessions is really talking about enhanced enforcement of the Cohn Memorandum priorities. And for the listeners who don't know, the reason why the federal government still says marijuana is illegal.
And calls it a Schedule I drug, doesn't it?
Correct.
Yeah.
But the federal government under the Obama administration said that they're going to tell U.S. attorneys to spend their limited resources in the area of marijuana to enforce a number of priorities, including things like sale to minors, front for money laundering.
So they're not going after people who are using it in small amounts.
Correct.
Even though they could, the law still allows them, but they weren't doing that.
Right. So that's the very odd tension we're in right now, which is 71% of the country lives in a state that allows some use of cannabis when it's still a federally illegal crime. Now, Congress has tried to bridge that tension a little bit. They've passed a funding provision every year that prohibits the Department of Justice from using any of their funding in state legal states.
Got it.
That rider, I believe, comes up again in April.
Okay.
It needs to be renewed. It only applies to medical states. Whether or not now it will apply to recreational states will be interesting.
Kevin, what do you see, given the way Manny just laid this out, that concerns you as a supporter of legalized marijuana?
Right. I worry we're creating another tobacco industry right under our nose. We're creating another for-profit profit-hungry industry, just like, frankly, Big Pharma that hoodwinked us on the opiate issue, but this time marijuana. And I'm not, you know, saying that marijuana is as harmful as heroin. Of course not. But I am saying that today's high-potent marijuana, which is driven by the industry. I mean, I got to tell you, drug cartels do a lot of bad things, but they didn't create pot gummy bears or ice creams that are sending kids to the emergency room. That is an industry legal marijuana creation. And I worry that there is this massive new industry that, you know, I think also in full disclosure, the good Dr. Manny was a part of when he left the Minnesota Medical Marijuana Program, and it still is. Uh-huh. I worry about this industry and the lobbyists and special interest groups and their influence. Now, I don't think we should be arresting and throwing into prison low-level marijuana users. And frankly, I worked in the Obama administration. We issued the memo. Even before the memo, and even in the Bush administration, and let's give them credit, they were not arresting, you know, folks for smoking joints. Otherwise, I think half the college population would have been behind bars. So yeah, that wasn't right. happening. But the issue is, the problem, and I think the conundrum that I think Sessions and others are looking at, is none of the priorities that the Obama administration laid out, and they were good priorities, none of them have been enforced. So they sort of put out this memo and then didn't want to talk about this issue. And really, politically, it's a difficult issue to talk about, frankly, because you sort of don't want to, you know, get in the way of what you see might be progressive change. On the other hand, do you want to be allowing the next big tobacco and pot shops on your corner? I mean, people living in communities, they might sort of think, yeah, you know, let's regulate marijuana. And then you ask them, well, okay, we're going to put a marijuana store that sells pot gummy bears in your neighborhood. How are you with that? They don't like that.
Well,
they
it seems like Coloradans have been just fine with that.
Yeah.
Doesn't
I mean,
it?
it's well, they're no, actually 70% of Colorado localities have voted against allowing any marijuana stores in their communities. In fact, when this is put up to a vote in terms of specifically, will you zone and allow the regulation of a store in your community? Mm-hmm. 7 or 8 out of 10 times it fails. Even if, again, in theory, people are voting for or saying, like in maybe your poll, hey, yeah, let's regulate it like alcohol. That sounds good. When push comes to shove and it's about a pot shop in your community, minds change. So I think we're in for a lot of uncertainty. I mean, I don't think any of us can predict what's going to happen. If I was a marijuana investor now, I'd be worried. I'd be very cautious. I'd be not, you know, this would not be something that I'd want to gamble in because there's so much uncertainty. And federal law is still federal law, and that would need to be a change in Congress, and there hasn't been a change in Congress.
Let me grab some calls, because as you can imagine, we're getting a lot of people that want to get in on this. To the phones, to Jordan in St. Paul. Hi, Jordan.
Hi.
Hey, what are you thinking about this?
Taking my call. Well, I grew up in the DARE era and got a lot of really negative rhetoric about marijuana when I was growing up. And currently, I have a family member who's got an autoimmune disorder that gets a lot of relief from medical marijuana, although it's not legal here for her because of the condition. And so I think my opinion about pot has definitely changed significantly. And it's really a bummer to see that kids are still getting taught that the federal classification of pot based on, false information.
Well, I think we need to, if I can get in here, I think we should be clear about what the information is and what it isn't. The National Academy of Sciences just put out, and again, don't take our word for it, look at the National Academy of Sciences, independent body, non-governmental, or the World Health Organization, which is an international United Nations body. They put out a report last year, NAS did one this year, laying out what the health effects of marijuana are. And there are absolutely, as your callers implied, there are medical there's medical value when it comes to the marijuana plant. The question is, though, do we smoke the marijuana plant or dab it or vape it or whatever to get those effects? Opium has medical value. We don't ask people to smoke opium to get the effects of morphine, where opium comes from. So we should do research. The federal classification, honestly, there are hundreds of researchers even now doing research. I think there should be more research on it. But that is very different than the fact that we also have to realize there are harms. The link to psychosis and schizophrenia for some people, not everybody, the link to lung issues, to, of course, pregnant women issues.
Which are present for tobacco and alcohol. And let me bring Manny in on this. Manny, go ahead.
Yeah, so I don't disagree that the use of cannabis as medicine needs to be studied, well vetted. I think the challenge we have, though, is that we don't have a regimen, despite the number of studies going on, that allows for that to occur. When you have a non-evidence-based classification of cannabis as a Schedule I, for no apparent reason, that really does make it difficult for people to get help. And I have to admit, you know, my evolution on this when I was at the health department started from like, yeah, this is about people like wanting an excuse to get high. Then you start meeting
you
the
mean
patient.
The medical side of that?
On the medical side.
You were that skeptical even about the medical use
right.
of it.
But then you meet the patients and then you review the literature and you go, oh, wait a minute, there's data on this. And then you find out that, oh, wait a minute, all of these other countries are engaged in therapeutic use of cannabis. That
yeah,
makes you start going.
Manny, we're doing it with the bikini-clad woman on Venice Beach saying if you have a headache and you're 20, come get your medical, quote-unquote, wink-wink marijuana.
Right, but Kevin, you're making an argument for the nature in which we regulate.
Okay,
we should
go through the FDA. And why is marijuana the one, if it's a medication, why do we say, you know what, for all medications, you have to go through the FDA and you have to be dispensed at a pharmacy. But for marijuana, we're going to make an exception. No pharmacies. We're going to open a separate store for one medicine.
Okay, but I want to make sure for our listeners here, do you both agree that it ought to go through the FDA? That there needs to be, Kevin, you do. Manny, what do you think?
I would say yes, but. And the but is the FDA is aligned towards a traditional pharmaceutical model for approval. It doesn't allow for a whole medicine approach to medication.
Okay.
That's a concept that is not foreign. Well, sorry, it is foreign. Other countries have whole plant herbal approaches.
But let me be clear. So if it went through the FDA, the way marijuana is being sold now, it would not be permitted to be sold like that. Is that right?
Well, it's not permitted now under federal law, but it's happening. So
right. But it is permitted under state laws.
A lot of people are making a ton of money going around the FDA.
Understood.
These medical companies.
But I'm just curious about that, Manny. I mean, the way this stands now, these shops that are selling marijuana would not be able to do it.
I think FDA approval and regulation would change the industry, the medical side, quite a bit.
Okay. Let me grab some other calls here to Abdi in Bloomington. Hi, good morning. Thanks for waiting.
Hi there. Thank you for accepting my call.
Sure, go ahead.
Hi. The first point that I wanted to make was first to enforce this law across the United States would have a bigger response from the citizens of the country. This is something like you were mentioning where a lot of states have passed it for recreational purposes as well as medicinal purposes, and then having the federal government step in and telling people then how to use it or basically prohibiting them from using it will have a bigger effect. And the other thing that I want to touch base on is the idea of studying it more and finding out more about it.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like with, you know, since the introduction of marijuana use more in the 60s and 70s, there's been plenty of research and that, yes, the potency has gone up. But this idea of, hey, you can go into a medicinal shop and the potency is too high and that, you know, you have gummy bears is kind of ridiculous because when you go in there, you can clearly see, especially states like Colorado, the percentage of cannabis or CBD if you want something that takes away pain more than getting high on there. And there's strains where you don't get high at all. And the gummy bears and kind of the regulations that go around that are very strict. And I can understand having the concern, especially if you're a parent or having children. But it's the same thing about buying alcohol and tobacco and that you store it in a safe place so that kids don't have access to it. For the most part. And the final point is, you know, with the whole FDA approving it, that's kind of also ridiculous because when you know that the federal government has a law against it, how can the FDA ever approve it or ever get to that point when, you know, there's been little to no debate had in Congress or anything like that.
Right,
we want to jump to having the FDA talk right. about this. And the other point I want to mention is, you know, the government has been researching marijuana in the University of Mississippi for a long time, and they have enough information to make a decision from there. So that's really all I wanted to say.
Okay, so Kevin, would you speak to what Abdi said about
sure.
you can go into a store, you can
right.
find about,
yeah.
you know, the THC
sure.
content and all of
right.
that?
Yeah, but if you're 5 years old, you're not looking at the THC content. You're
5 year olds
bar.
Aren't going to be sold
no,
gummy bears
but,
at one of these stores.
Of course they're not. The point is, though, when there's more supply and because of legalization and the gummy bear is brought home by the person who knew what they were buying, and there's been now a 230% increase, according to Colorado emergency rooms, of literally under 10-year-old kids accidentally ingesting these because they're left out and they're eating them, that's a public health problem.
And in response,
they're not reading the label.
Got it. The other issues
that were brought up.
Hold on one second. Just on that point, Manny, you were going to say.
But to Kevin's point, in response, Colorado has toughened up the regulations around edibles, around packaging, around making them less likely to be attractive to kids. Mm-hmm. Now, the other part I'd also make a point of is Colorado doesn't have to be the way you do cannabis in any state.
And why would you say that's not the model for the way other states?
Well,
Manny, to you first.
Sure. Yeah. So, for example, in Minnesota, we opted to go with a non-smoking medical model.
Uh-huh.
And that was driven by a lot of different concerns. But in part, one of the concerns that the health department at the time was that titration, dosing, and predictability of a smoked medicine wasn't a particularly good medicine. Not to mention, when you're the health department, you're not a big fan of smoking, period. Now, so with that in mind, I think it's a mistake to think that the only way you can do this is the Colorado model.
Sure. So I think there were mixing up a lot of different terms. Even, I got to say, the introduction. Decriminalization is not medicalization, which is not legalization. So we have to be really clear about the terms, because we're sort of saying Colorado gummies and then we're going to medical. The issue is decriminalization, removing criminal penalties, as was mentioned at the beginning of the show, mm-hmm. as a topic.
Yeah.
No problem. We don't want to throw people. No, I don't know anyone anymore who wants. Well, I don't think Bill Bennett.
Wait. You say no problem, but then you hear, well, I'm going to play what Sean Spicer had to say at a press conference when he was asked. Yes, he was not talking about medical marijuana here. He was talking about these states that have passed recreational use. Listen to how he put it.
When you see something like the opioid addiction crisis blossoming in so many states around this country, the last thing that we should be doing is encouraging people. There is still a federal law that we need to abide by in terms of the medical, when it comes to recreational marijuana and other drugs of that nature.
Oh, okay. So you hear that, Kevin?
Yes,
he
is
talking about people that are using it recreationally in any amount.
There's a difference between legalization, which is what those states have done, mm-hmm. and decriminalization. I'm saying, and so there's three different terms, not two. Decriminalization is simply the removal of criminal penalties, not putting people in prison, and people are not going to prison, let's be clear, for smoking a joint. That, and I don't think they should. Recreational legalization, I think, is what Sean was referring to, what we're really all kind of, you know, many of us are talking about. That's the kind of the new policy in Colorado and seven other states. That's when we get into the legalization, the recreational sales, the retail sales of all of these products, which in my mind, and Patrick Kennedy, the former congressman, and I have an op-ed today in the Washington Post where we talk about recreational legalization creating this industry, what we call big marijuana. This is our big concern. That we are creating a for-profit industry. I don't want to put people in handcuffs for pot. I don't want to ruin their life with a criminal record. Let's not do that. They want to smoke it at home as adults. Have a blast.
But whether you want that or not, Kevin, that's not what the law says. And I'm talking about what the law says
right now.
It's nice that you're okay with the fact that people smoke a joint or two at home, but we are talking about where the law stands today and what Jeff Sessions thinks about that law. Right.
But federal law is not being enforced in state and local. There's nobody
for
going to prison.
Now. But Jeff Sessions is the new attorney general.
So what I'm saying is, in terms of my opinion, I'm not the attorney general, is I hope that doesn't happen.
Well,
I think we could agree with that.
Yes. But I want to make sure that you're not saying, well, the terms of this whole conversation are wrong. They're not. We're taking a look at where the federal law stands and what the attorney general has said about it and believed. Manny, go ahead.
So Kevin's right that there are a lot of different terms floating around here, but I'll have to admit, I'm not sure I understand the distinction between decriminalization and full legalization.
Big distinction.
Well,
huge distinction.
But if you're talking about that people should be, I mean, what's an appropriate level then of sanction for someone possessing or using marijuana for recreational or medical purposes? I mean, that I guess, should they get a traffic ticket? Should it be a misdemeanor? I mean, I'm trying to understand.
That's the confusion of where we're at right now, isn't it? where the law is.
I think it's possible. I think the big difference between decrim and legalization is that with legalization, you get the retail sales, you get the industry, you get the advertising. I'm sorry, Colorado has done a horrendous job because the lobby has been in charge, not public health in the Capitol. And so they have the massive rampant advertising. They now are allowing smoking marijuana indoor in restaurants and clubs that get licenses. We haven't been able to smoke cigarettes in restaurants in 30 years. We're turning back the clock on public health with this, is what I'm saying. And I want to, again,
let me get some callers. Yeah, I want to get a number of callers in here, too, so you can address some of their questions. To Alan in Montrose. Hey, Alan. Hi. Thanks for waiting.
Hi.
Hi. What'd you want to say?
Well, you made the point of saying that there's some medical value in opium, but we don't allow people to smoke it. And then there's a medical value in marijuana, but we don't, you know, maybe we shouldn't allow people to smoke it. But there's no medical value in tobacco or alcohol. So is it only the things that have no medical value that we can use and sell to each other? Because that doesn't make any sense.
Kevin?
Right. So alcohol and tobacco, I mean, so a couple things. One, alcohol. Look, alcohol is not legal because it's awesome for everybody and it's really good for you and there's no public. Alcohol is legal because for the last 5,000 years, 70% of people have been regularly drinking. Today, less than 9% use marijuana. There's a big cultural difference in terms of the acceptance. And if 70% of people were smoking marijuana daily in this country, we'd all have to be thinking about models of legalization. You couldn't say we're going to prohibit something. I think we should try and discourage the use of marijuana given the health harms on kids. Tobacco is different. Tobacco, actually, in many ways, tobacco is more harmful than marijuana in terms of its effects, direct effects on the lung, and the research on lung cancer is much stronger for tobacco than it is for marijuana. On the other hand, tobacco doesn't cause the behavioral changes that marijuana does because it doesn't get you, doesn't, you're not
well,
intoxicated
alcohol
when
does.
You...
Well, alcohol
yeah,
does.
I know, it does. You're right. But on tobacco for a second, let me just finish this point. I'm happy to go back to alcohol. With tobacco, you know, you don't smoke a cigarette and get into a car accident or, you know, not have motivation or, you know, get psychosis from that. And with tobacco, we have pushed back so much. I mean, we're trying to increase the age of tobacco. We're trying to, you know, put all these very strict rules. And when we're doing that, we're seeing reductions in tobacco use. To me, it's ironic that with marijuana, we're saying, you know what, we're going to make sure tobacco is almost impossible to get and you can't smoke it anywhere. But you know, with marijuana, let's bring it back to restaurants. Let's have advertising. You know, we haven't seen Joe Camel in 30 years.
I have not. Manny, weigh in here. I have yet to see any state say, bring it back to all these places and expose kids under
Colorado
12 to it.
Colorado allows indoor smoking now. I mean,
but again,
go ahead.
I think that's the challenge, is assuming that the Colorado models are going to be the model in every state in the country. For example, it wouldn't surprise me that if Utah ever decides to go ahead and allow recreational marijuana, which I imagine they'd be one of the last states to do so, you can only do so from a Utah-run store. I mean, every state does alcohol differently, right? Until recently in Minnesota, you couldn't buy alcohol on a Sunday. I mean, state regulation of alcohol, if you use that as a model, doesn't mean we all end up like Colorado. Now, you might actually end up with some states where you say, look, everyone can grow their own, and they can trade, but there can't be a commercial industry. So I think to just say Colorado is the final outcome, I think doesn't allow for the fact that states are really very different in terms of how they approach intoxicants.
Chelsea says on Twitter, as a Colorado resident, I think your recent caller Abdi nailed it. Angela says, who's a physician, as a pediatrician, I join AAP in concerns that this creates for children's health. And to the phones, to Marva in St. Paul. Hey, good morning, Marva. Thanks for waiting.
Thank you. Good morning. I am a 30-year APRN, and I have seen you have not addressed the psychological and the addictive issues of marijuana. And just as everyone who drinks alcohol doesn't get addicted, I have seen people in my experience that have become addicted to marijuana. And it is the greatest demotivator I have ever seen in any addiction in my history. And I do think that there are, I know there are people that I have in my mental health work that are in treatment for marijuana addiction. And so that's an issue I'd like to hear about.
Maddie, do you want to speak to that?
So there is data that suggests that marijuana abuse disorders are a real challenge. Mm-hmm. I think that I'm a little bit more ambivalent on recreational cannabis for that reason, in part because I also make the observation that our use of alcohol is not cost-free. We have one of the highest incidences of binge drinking in the United States. I would like to see, if we have recreational cannabis in our state, that it be done in such a way more similar to tobacco, where it's allowed, but it is discouraged and it is rare, and that the health effects, that any sort of revenue generated by that recreational sale be targeted to addressing any potential health effects of recreational use.
So, Kevin, we've got on the recreational side here, we have Colorado, Alaska, Oregon, Washington State, California, Nevada, Massachusetts, and Maine, right? As you've seen these ballot measures pass to permit recreational use of marijuana, have you seen some of the measures that Manny and our caller have just brought up? You know, resources for addiction treatment, some of the other issues that you've raised.
Well, I mean, we've seen really, and it's obviously, first of all, this is new. So no one's saying, oh, my God, 2 years later, we sort of know this is a complete success or complete failure. But so far, especially in the older states that have done it, like Colorado, I think we've seen a lot of concerns. And in terms of resources, you know, people always said, well, the tax revenue can pay for the treatment. Anyone doing alcohol treatment or tobacco sort of giggles or maybe cries when they hear that, because even though we have alcohol and tobacco taxes, we are nowhere near paying for the social costs, let alone just the treatment for those disorders, let alone the other costs that come along with more use of them. And that's also happening with marijuana. And look, it happens with the lottery. I mean, find me a state where the lottery has saved public education like it was supposed to. I mean, people, there have been increased costs, and we're not talking about those costs enough. Your caller highlights some of those costs, and you know, the long-term costs of somebody with schizophrenia, the long-term costs of somebody with a marijuana use disorder. I deal with parents every day who say, you know, my kid's college fund, $100,000 that was supposed to go to education, has gone to a year of treatment for marijuana, and we thought this was like the marijuana from Woodstock.
And that might occur whether marijuana was legalized or not. I mean, look what's happening with opioids, and look what has happened with cocaine.
Well,
when people get addicted, whether it's legal or not.
Yeah,
whether it's legal or not.
A legal classification of drugs that were pushed also by an industry. Of course, marijuana is here, whether it's illegal. I'm not saying that when marijuana is not legal, poof, it's disappeared. What I'm saying is, when it is legal, you have a massive industry profiting off of the increased use of it. So it needs more users. It needs younger users. Nobody gets addicted to drugs after age 30. If you haven't tried drugs before 30,
with tobacco. Right.
What's that?
Often as with tobacco.
Oh, absolutely.
Right?
And alcohol.
If you don't get them by their 12 or 13.
Oh, I couldn't agree more. Alcohol, tobacco, and marijuana, and I don't say gateway, but these sort of pathways can provide pathways to addiction. And my issue with people, and also when Manny said, and I'm glad to hear that, Manny, you're more ambivalent on legalization. That's good. But my issue with when people say, well, but we get this with alcohol. Since when did two wrongs make a right?
Okay.
If my headlights are broken on my car, I don't break my taillights to be consistent.
You had me at two wrongs and a right. I think we understand that. Kevin Sabet is with us. He's director of the Drug Policy Institute and a former senior advisor to the White House Office of National Drug Control Policy. And Manny Munson-Regala is with. He's a former regulatory and compliance officer with the Minnesota Department of Commerce and some other agencies, and now the principal of Root Cause Consulting. And if you haven't figured it out, yet another spirited conversation on talking about legalization of marijuana. This time we are zeroing in on what it means when we now have an attorney general in Jeff Sessions who has expressed disapproval of this move to legalize recreational marijuana. I don't know where he stands on medical marijuana. Actually, I haven't seen that. But that's the frame for our conversation, and we're talking about some of the pros and the cons of this. 651-227-6000 to tell me about whether your opinion has changed on this over the last few years. 800-242-2828. Manny, you were going to say.
So, Kara, I'd also add that other nominees to keep an eye on are,
yes,
Dr. Tom Price.
Right. Health and Human Services.
He's not been a big fan either.
Okay.
But we don't know who they're going to appoint for DEA. We don't know who's going to be heading NIDA, National Institute of Drug Abuse. There are a number of different sort of additional appointees that may have some influence, direction, discussion around this. It'll be interesting to see if they continue to draw the split between recreational and medical.
Right.
In part because of the clip you played from Sean Spicer, one of the things that I went with it is Sean's obviously not been looking at the data that suggests that in states that have medical cannabis, the rates of opioid overdoses are lower. Or that in the states where there is medical marijuana, Medicare Part D prescription drug expenses are lower. Now, is there a cause and effect relationship? I don't know, but that's an interesting data point to take a look at.
Call here from Reggie in Cross Lake, Wisconsin. Hey, Reggie, hi. What'd you want to say?
Hey.
Hi.
My biggest thing, and especially, it's been discussed with Sessions, the more or less the social stigma, I believe, that needs to be overcame. And I think you'll especially see that in younger generations now, whether or not it's the other gentleman in the conversation with 5-year-olds or 12-year-olds, you know, eating gummy bears, that's a very, honestly, unlikely situation. And that goes into the whole marketing world that, that these big tobacco and alcohol companies are using towards minors. So be that. However, I think we'll see in the coming years that, like I said, the social stigma, it's going to change and it's going to, grow in regards to how accepting and open people are to the idea of having said recreational and even medical marijuana, in my opinion.
All right. Good to have your opinion, Reggie. And I'm going to hear from Jean in St. Paul now. Good morning, Jean. Hi.
Good morning. One of the great things about the United States is that we do have 50 states to try some of these things out. My concern is that states have been jumping on this bandwagon before the sort of longitudinal effects of legalizing pot are being well known. And what people don't really understand is once an industry like this, as your guest says, gets a hold of it, the state gets addicted to the revenue, and that cash is pouring in. And it's cash now, problems later. And I just think I would be horrified if Minnesota, for example, passed it for recreational use. And I believe the industry problem is tremendous. And it's not just because it'll be big marijuana. It's going to be flowing funds straight into the state coffers. Okay. And you'll never be able. It's sort of like gambling. You can't get a tank of gas in South Carolina without being bombarded by the legalized gambling everywhere. It affects people in ways they can't even imagine.
Gene, this is a really good point, and I want to give Manny a chance to respond to that.
Sure. So I can say that at least in Minnesota, when we passed our medical cannabis law here, no state revenues flow from the sales because our Department of Revenue said, oh, wait a minute, it's a medicine. We don't tax medicine.
But if we went recreational, that might be a different story.
I think if we went recreational, there would be a big question about what the appropriate level of taxation should be. So, for example, there's a lot of argument that the level of taxation that applies to alcohol in our state might be too low, given what Kevin's talked about, sort of the carry-on effects, law enforcement, et cetera. That's one of the most challenging discussions is what's the right amount of revenue.
And we don't have enough time to take that up, but I think we will on another day. Manny, thank you very much for being here.
Thank you.
Kevin, as always, good to have your views on the show. Thank you very much.
Wonderful to be here. Thank you.
You can tweet me on your views on this at Kerry, KerriMPR. If you missed the show, you just caught a little bit of the discussion, you can always find these discussions on your podcast, NPR News with Kerry Miller, wherever you get your podcasts.